Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Welcome to ID the Future. My name is Sarah Chaffee. Today we have on the show with us Dr. Ann Gager, who holds a PhD in zoology from the University of Washington and completed a postdoctoral fellowship at Harvard. She is a senior fellow of the Center for Science and Culture and serves as a scientist at Biologic Institute, as well as director of science communications at the Center for Science and Culture. Thanks for joining us again, Anne.
Glad to be here.
The scientist and artist David Goodsell noted, "As is often the case in biology, things get even more complicated when you look closer." Dr. Gager, a recent paper came out in the journal Cell. Would you tell us about this paper and what intrigued you about it?
Okay. The paper was about a process that happens very early in embryogenesis in mouse and in human, and an observation they made that is quite surprising. So this is one of those cases where I decided to look closer, as did they. The paper described how there's a critical transition that takes place at the 2 to 4 cell stage in development. When an egg is fertilized, it has a DNA from its mother and DNA from its father. And the DNA from those two sources is differently imprinted. It's got what we call epigenetic modifications on it that make different parts of it active and inactive. So the father's DNA and the mother's DNA are different in their epigenetics. At the time of the 2-cell stage in mouse, there's a transition where it goes from relying on the proteins and RNAs that the mother put into the egg to making its own RNAs and proteins. That transition requires a certain set of things to happen. One of them is that the modifications to the DNA have to be changed. They have to go from parental to the embryonic modifications. That's true for humans as well at the 4-cell stage. And if you block that process, nothing will happen. The embryos won't develop further. They have to make their own RNAs and proteins. It turns out that in order for that process to happen, there needs to be a compound called pyruvate in the medium. When they culture mouse embryos in medium lacking pyruvate, they freeze at that 2-cell stage and won't go further. And at the 4-cell stage, that's true for human embryos as well. Now, they were suspicious that perhaps pyruvate was involved in the production of some of the chemicals that are necessary for the modification to take place. Chemicals called alpha-ketoglutarate or acetyl-CoA or ATP are necessary for those epigenetic modifications to take place. And they are all the product of a chemical cycle called the citric acid cycle, also called the tricarboxylic acid cycle, or TCA cycle for short. That cycle is a series of chemical reactions that produce the metabolites that are needed for epigenetic modification. Normally, those chemicals are needed for the basic metabolism of the cell. They are involved in biosynthesis of a lot of different things. And normally, those enzymes and their products are produced in the mitochondrion. But what they discovered in this paper and reported is that those enzymes are not active in the mitochondrion at this early, early stage of development. They're active in the nucleus. Now, that's a big surprise. How do you get these enzymes from the mitochondrion into the nucleus? Maybe I need to emphasize it even more. An undergrad in biology learns early on that the citric acid cycle, the TCA cycle as it's also called, happens in the mitochondrion. That's where it takes place. It's involved in the energy production for the cell. It makes ATP. It's in the mitochondrion. That's just, we've talked about it in earlier podcasts. That's the powerhouse of the cell. That's where all these processes go on. So to find these enzymes operating in the nucleus is a big surprise.
Tell me more about the TCA cycle.
Well, that's a really interesting set of chemical reactions. It's called a cycle because you start at A, you go to B, to C, to D, to E, to F, to G, and back to A. It's a cycle that reuses it. It regenerates the very thing it starts with. So it starts with citric acid, and it produces all these compounds and then ends up back at citric acid again, regenerating it. In order for the citric acid cycle to start, though, it needs to get carbon from this compound called pyruvate. Pyruvate is broken down by an enzyme called pyruvate dehydrogenase to produce acetyl-CoA, and acetyl-CoA enters into the citric acid cycle and kicks it off. Turns out that acetyl-CoA is also used for this epigenetic reprogramming of the nucleus, as are some of the other products from the citric acid cycle. So it makes sense in a way that the enzymes might be operating in the nucleus, so they'd be close by and producing these reagents, these chemicals that are necessary for the epigenetic reprogramming, the alpha-ketoglutarate and the acetyl-CoA and the ATP. It's just a surprise that they should be there, because how do you get the enzymes into the nucleus? So I was curious, if you have to get the enzymes into the nucleus, how hard would it be? And I decided to do some digging. Remember the enzyme I mentioned, PDH, or pyruvate dehydrogenase? Now, the way I saw it in the textbook when they drew the citric acid cycle was, okay, there's this enzyme called pyruvate dehydrogenase, and it produces acetyl-CoA, and then another enzyme does this, and another. It's just words on a page, right? But if you look up what pyruvate dehydrogenase is, what the proteins are that carry out the reaction, it turns out it's not just a single protein, it's a whole complex of proteins that carries out that one pyruvate dehydrogenase reaction. And the complex is huge. Depending on the organism and the situation, it can be a cube-shaped core of enzymes of 24 units. That's just the core. I think it's enzyme 2, and then it's decorated with enzymes 1 and 3 and some cofactors. It's a huge complex. Alternatively, it can be a dodecahedral core of 60 units of enzyme 2 decorated with enzymes 1 and 3, and it's a flexible complex that where the proteins move around so they can trade off the substrates in their reaction to one another. It's like a factory assembly that's involved in breaking down pyruvate into acetyl-CoA. In fact, it's the biggest known complex, protein enzyme complex, which is just remarkable. It's not something I expected to stumble on. After just looking at words on a page, I didn't expect to find anything so huge. So it turns out also that PDH, being part of the citric acid cycle, is present not just in vertebrates like us, but in all oxygen-using organisms, including bacteria. And the structure is similar in bacteria. In fact, that's how they first identified this complex, was in bacteria. So then I thought to myself, well, you know, if I were a designer, I would put the genes that encode these enzymes all together on the chromosome so that they could be expressed together and then make it easier for the complex to assemble. But if I were a Darwinist, I would have no reason to expect them to be together, except my knowledge that sometimes it happens that these things are together. So I went and I looked, just digging a little deeper, and it turns out, as I expected but didn't expect at the same time, the genes were all together in a complex on the chromosome, side by side. So I've encountered 3 or 4 marvelous things in the space of researching this one question brought on by this one paper. I've encountered epigenetic modification of the DNA necessary for embryonic development, I've encountered the fact that the citric acid cycle enzymes have somehow found a use in the nucleus in addition to the mitochondrion. And I've encountered this huge enzyme complex that's important for basic processes, both early in development and throughout life. And then I've encountered the fact that the genes for this enzyme complex are co-localized, organized. It's a case of uncovering the information content of the nucleus and how it's modified and arranged in early development, the complexity of the cell and how its chemistry works and functions at multiple levels. And I've encountered order. So all of those things are what I would expect if I were looking at the world as designed, life as designed, but not what I would expect just due to neo-Darwinian processes. That kind of complexity and order and sophistication is just remarkable.
It really seems like the further you dig, the more you find.
Yep.
Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Gager.
You're welcome.
And thank you to our listeners. Join us next time for more on ID the Future.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.